Hello. Just to let you know that this episode contains some strong language and racist terminology within the description of a lived experience that some listeners may find offensive.
Hello. It's me again, Seamus Carey. Now, here's a question for you. What comes to mind when you think of the word nationalist? Have a little think. During 2021, I became obsessed with the power and the many meanings that this word can have. So much so that I wanted to make a new one-man comedy show about it. So I started by putting this question to different audiences. Interestingly, I nearly always got the same answers. Here's a recording of a work-in-progress gig at Bodmin Old Library.
What comes to mind straight away when you hear the word nationalist or nationalism? Anything come to mind? Any imagery? Any type of people?
Racist.
Okay, very good. Anything else?
Shouty people,
yeah, that's good. A bit like me.
People like statues quite a lot.
They what?
People that like statues,
that's good, yeah.
Or don't like statues.
Yeah, it depends what type of nationalist you are, that's interesting. Anything else?
Flags.
Yeah. Demonstrations.
Aggressive.
Do we feel it's a positive word or a negative word?
Negative.
Did you notice that one person said both? Let's listen again.
Positive word or a negative word?
Negative.
See? That is what I'm fascinated by. Because before I set out on this journey of discovery, I would have also described a nationalist in a negative light. But, as I was about to find out, maybe nationalism could have positive connotations as well. So much of this debate is wrapped up in identity, heritage, and where you were born. Who can and can't call themselves Cornish? Can I? And would I ever identify as a Cornish nationalist? Let's find out in The Reason Why.
Episode 6, Nationalism.
As I was collecting interviews for this podcast, I began to notice more and more that there were people, even friends of mine, who I like and respect, who weren't afraid to use the word nationalist. It all started when I was chatting to this guy.
I come from a very, very Cornish background. Like, I reckon I am the most Cornish person in Cornwall. Like, in terms of my family history, like, there is, like, back to the Doomsday Book on my mum and my dad's side. Yeah, I mean, I shouldn't even physically be alive.
This is Andy Rowe. He's a lovely chap who does very positive things, like singing in the Oggy Men, the Cornish folk group.
Have you always been interested in Cornishness? Or was there a point in your life where it maybe accelerated?
Yeah, there was. It was a very vivid moment, really. I in school, I think when I was the year 2000, so I got given a book called Curan Obis Vic.
So did I.
Cornwall Forever.
Curan Obis Vigan. This is Cornish for Cornwall Forever. It's a slogan often associated with the Cornish nationalist movement, but also something that's shouted by people at rugby matches or put on T-shirts and bumper stickers. But in this context, it was the name of a book given to every Cornish schoolchild in the year 2000. It was designed to enable the kids to understand their own heritage. I was 7 years old when I received this book, and I've still got it. It definitely sparked the beginning of my understanding that Cornwall was different. It seemed pivotal for Andy too.
I got given that book, and almost within like a few weeks, I'd researched enough of it, and I think I probably perhaps always assumed I was English, because although I'm from a very Cornish family, it was never like a discussed thing, that we were just who we were.
I wondered if Andy had embraced his Cornish identity more the older he got. He reminisced about an end-of-year assembly that he experienced during secondary school.
Mr. Berryman, our teacher, and he said, "Who here is Cornish?" And only Shane Whitford put his hand up out of like 130 kids. And I speak to a lot of my friends from school now, and I think if you were to ask the same question now, I expect 95% of us would put our hands up.
Yeah.
So that you're right, you become more aware of your identity and it becomes a bigger part of your life.
So it was time to ask the big question.
Would you ever describe yourself as a Cornish nationalist?
Yeah. And I mean, more so when I was younger, because after I read Cur Nobis Ficin, not long after that, John Angarick released his book, Breaking the Chains.
Now, this is a really important book. Self-published in 1999, John Angarick's Breaking the Chains, Propaganda, Censorship, Deception and the Manipulation of Public Opinion in Cornwall. It's a strong title, with an equally strong cover image featuring a manacled fist punching towards the sky with bolts of lightning and a Cornish flag tattooed on the arm. There aren't many copies around these days, and when I did track one down, I didn't get that far into it, if I'm honest. I'd like to blame it on the tiny print size, but it wasn't the easiest book to read. Andy Rowe managed it, though.
You know, it's like a radicalisation to an extent, because I was reading all this thing about our history that wasn't taught to me in school, that I didn't know about. And I went out and sprayed English heritage signs.
I should explain here, Andy's talking about English Heritage, the charity that maintains historical monuments. There's often resentment from Cornish nationalists about the fact that landmarks are mistaken as English when they're actually not. Although you could argue they do look after them.
When I was 17, I went to a pretty full-on meeting in Truro. But it was a proper like nationalist meeting, and they were talking about what we're going to do about English heritage, and it was pretty, it's not the sort of, not a safe environment for an impressionable 17-year-old who just read Breaking the Chains by John. It really is a minority. I don't think that the Cornish and Cornwall is sustainable with those views.
We recorded this interview a few weeks before the UK's 2021 national census. At the time, there was a lot of online friction and debate about how there wasn't a tick box for Cornish when it came to the question of national identity. There was British, Scottish, Welsh, and then there was the other box. Firstly, I could totally understand why it might feel reductive or disrespectful for anyone to have to fill that box in. Let's face it, the word other is a complex one at best. Then there was the debate of who can and can't call themselves Cornish. As someone whose ancestry goes as far back as the Doomsday Book, I wanted to get Andy's angle on this.
Someone's posted something about the census, and then someone has asked the question, well, how do you know if you're Cornish? And some dickhead will write in there, you have to have, your mother and father has to be Cornish, and you have to have been born in Cornwall. And you think, well, hold on, bud. If we carry on like that, in three generations' time, we aren't going to have any Cornish people. So I think we need to be a bit more welcoming on that front.
So he seemed pretty cool about it. But this obsession with heritage and ancestry is certainly something that seeps into the general Cornish psyche. He gave me a good example. The market town of Helston is famous for its spring celebration, Flora Day. For hundreds of years, the town folk have danced through the streets, accompanied by the Helston Town Band and that infamous, catchy tune. There's an early morning dance at 7 a.m, a midday dance, and there's also a children's dance. Over 1,200 kids from the four schools of Helston dance dressed in white and awkwardly hold the hand of a classmate from the opposite sex. With all of these dances, it's not critical that you were born in the town, but it is quite important.
what they do in schools, which I think is, and I've mentioned this to proper Halstonians, and it's like they don't like it, but when you do the children's dance, the deeper your roots to the Halston community, the further to the front of the queue you can get.
Really?
And I find that, you know, as adults, we can sort of deal with that, and we can understand that there's a lot of history there, which is, but, you know, when you're six and yeah. you get told that, you know, just because you just moved there, you're not allowed to get at the front of the queue, I find that a bit weird.
That is really interesting.
Yeah.
A visual... Yeah. Physical representation of how much you belong here.
Yeah.
This is fascinating. I think in life, one of the things we all long to feel is that we belong. And events like this can embolden the community spirit of a town, making people feel special and unique. Often, the easiest way to define who we are is by defining who we aren't.
When I would openly say I'm a Cornish nationalist, it would be to really define my national identity, so I am not English.
Do you still call yourself Cornish nationalist?
Well, but it depends how it would. If someone was to say, well, this is what nationalism is, I could answer that question, but it just seems so, I think in Cornwall, because it's to say that you're Cornish as opposed to English, you know, that almost makes you a Cornish nationalist, mm-hmm. you know, in some people's eyes. Mm. But whereas if you were to just state that you were Irish or French, it wouldn't necessarily mean you were a nationalist, but I think it's taken on a fairly unique meaning in Cornwall.
It feels to me that a big part of this movement is about asserting that Cornwall is separate from England. And as we learned in episode 4, maybe there's good reason for this when looking at the history of oppression from the English government. Now, I know we've heard from him a lot already in this series, but here's someone who has fairly left-wing progressive politics, but also defines as a Cornish nationalist. How could the two coexist? Here's the Jedi Master of Cornish culture, Will Coleman.
Nationalism is a clunky and not very helpful term. Do you know, so much of this stuff is about language and what we mean by words, and had we a more subtle way of describing things, it wouldn't be an issue.
Will acknowledged how the word can have negative connotations.
Right now, nationalism is fucking ugly. You know, Polish nationalism. I can't even think the list of countries across Eastern Europe where you've got this really BNP style, the N in BNP, the nationalness of... And it's all around asserting a sense of, very often DNA defined... We're the people, you're not.
But then, there's the other side to this debate.
At the same time as that, all around this globe, there are peoples who are oppressed. Look at what's happening in China. And you need a word for those people who wish to assert their own self against a centralising, domineering, colonising force. And at the moment, we've only got this one word, and the word nationalism is used for both things.
Mm.
You know, Scottish nationalism is not the same as Brexiteering English nationalism.
Mm.
They're poles apart. And I would say that the vast majority of people I know who self-identify as Cornish nationalists are liberal, inclusive, outward-looking, forward-looking. They're not right-wing in any sense of that word.
So this may be the case. And I want to explore what these progressive nationalists actually want a little bit later. But before we do that, I'm still confused about what actually defines a Cornish person. And in Will's case, this sometimes can be a contentious issue.
I was assigned an English identity. I was born in the English city of Bristol to English parents.
Mm.
And I was translocated to Cornwall as a small child.
Mm.
So there are those people who would deny me Cornish identity.
And
I've had it said to me, face on, you are not Cornish.
Are there many of those people?
I don't come across too many of those, that kind of small-mindedness. You do come across it, and it exists, but it's not the first thing, and it's not the thing that matters the most.
Mm.
However, there are quite a lot of people that say that. In fact, I've heard it said specifically about Will. Here's an example. I was out interviewing a woman called George about something entirely different when she revealed this to me.
You know, I'm Cornish, and I'm about as Cornish as you can fucking get. Because I'm from West Penwith. When I'm down there, I can feel it running through my blood, and I can feel it, and I can feel hundreds and hundreds of years of my ancestors' footfall.
People get very passionate about the whole where you were born thing. Personally, I find it kind of tedious. But then maybe I would. I haven't told you where my parents were born yet. I asked George what she thought of Will's Cornishness.
Do you know Will Coleman? He built the man engine.
Yeah, Hillary's.
He wasn't born here, he's embraced Cornish identity, and he's done a lot of good stuff for the Cornish name. How do you feel about that?
No. I'm only joking. But you're not Cornish.
Ouch. There you go. Now, back to Will. In 2014, the Cornish were granted minority status within the UK under the European Framework Convention for the Protection of National Minorities. But what did this mean?
Now, if it were the case that all Cornish people were born with bright green ears, we'd know who they are, and I wouldn't be allowed to be one without putting on a lot of makeup. Cornish is a national minority. The word nation, huge amount of misunderstanding what that word means. Nation means a people, and that means a self-defining people. So actually, the Cornish are a nation. They are a national minority. That's absolutely the case. And that's an ethnic thing. And if you look into ethnicity is far more fuzzy around the edges than race. Mm. It's not about your bloody DNA. For many years, I've had a little mantra which says, there are many ways to be Cornish. You may be Cornish because your ancestors go all the way back. And so there were people in America and Australia who say, I am Cornish, and they've never set foot here. You may be Cornish because you say, I was born here. That feels the most arbitrary of the lot. My mum happened to be here. I mean, you know, we've got Boris Johnson saying he's half Cornish because his dad happened to have been born here and his grandma happened to be here that day, kind of thing.
This is true, by the way. Boris Johnson's granny, Irene, was rushed to Penzance Hospital in 1940, where she gave birth to Stanley Johnson, the Prime Minister's father.
But then you get people who are saying, well, actually, I've married into this. I've been embedded in this community. It's been part of my working life. It's been part of my whatever life. And you just are part of the place. You belong to that place. It's a very different way of thinking about it. Mm. And I also know loads of people who would never say, I am Cornish. And yet, they get it, they champion it, they understand it.
Someone like my dad.
Someone like your lovely father, my dear buddy.
So, I should probably tell you now that my dad is Scottish. He was born in Airdrie, but ended up moving to Cornwall almost by accident in the early 80s. He joined a local theatre company, Knee High, who rose in fame and became internationally known for representing Cornish culture around the world. Which is nicely ironic, don't you think? My mum, however, was born in Falmouth and has lived there for most of her life. So this, I feel, puts me in good stead for claiming I'm Cornish. But I'm still not sure.
I'm trying to figure out, am I Cornish?
Yeah, I know that.
Am I Cornish?
I couldn't give a fuck. Shameless. You would never go, who's allowed to be British? Who's allowed to be English?
Some people would.
Oh, yes, okay, fair enough.
Like BNP.
Okay, fair enough. English. Yeah, fair enough.
That's the thing we're trying to avoid.
Right? I see what you mean.
I was still feeling paranoid after my email exchange with Dick Pemberthy, who implied that I was taking money that would be better spent on truly Cornish endeavours, which therefore left me wondering, am I Cornish?
Seamus, I know from the minute you said you wanted to do this interview that you were exploring your own relationship to your own Cornishness. What you don't know is that I have been subliminally brainwashing you your entire life. As a child, I hooked you subtly. And when we went to Brittany and played music, I stood at a distance but twiddled my fingers in exactly the right combination so that you would be enchanted by the loveliness of my bagpipe playing. And what's actually happening in this interview is that the circle is finally coming round full bore, and my evil plan to lure you into being Cornish is finally reaching its fruition. Of course you're Cornish, you twat! What else do you think you are? Are you English? A bit. Are you Scottish? A bit. You don't have to be 100% one and nothing percent the other. We're all a bloody myriad of different identities, Seamus. You silly bastard.
So after this rather dramatic wind-up, I was left feeling positive and optimistic.
You do not need my permission to be Cornish, and you may build your own identity in whatever manner you choose and use whichever elements have meaning for you.
However, as open-minded as Will and I want to feel about our Cornishness, there are other people who can take it too far. During the 1980s, a militant Cornish nationalist group became suspected of a series of attacks. They were known as An Goth, named after Michael Joseph An Goth from episode 4, who led the Cornish Rebellion. According to their Wikipedia page, which is fairly well maintained, I mean, that's interesting in itself. The group were supposedly responsible for a bomb explosion at the St Austell courthouse in 1980, a fire at a Penzance hairdresser's in 81, apparently they got the wrong address, and for placing broken glass under the sand at Portreath Beach in 84 to deter tourists. Then, in 2007, they popped up again, stating how they wanted to destroy all English flags in Cornwall. And I quote, "For those who question our motives, we refer them to the events of 1497 and 1549, and the years of English imperialistic repression which has followed. It's then believed that they merged into the Cornish National Liberation Army, which made threats towards the TV chefs Jamie Oliver and Rick Stein, saying they were enemies of the Cornish people. A 36-year-old man was later arrested. Not much has happened since then, which is surprising, really. When I was growing up, they had a sort of mythic, comedic status. Now and again, you'd see the words An Goth tipexed on a tourist information board somewhere. It was normally just teenagers having a laugh. What I'd love to do now is tell you how I found an original member or a spokesperson willing to give me their details and full backstory. But sadly, this isn't the case. As hard as I looked, I couldn't find anyone who knew anything. I guess that's what you should expect when looking for terrorists. There are, however, other Cornish parties who are much more approachable, non-violent, and currently gaining seats within Cornwall Council.
I've always said we're sort of like 20 years behind Wales and maybe 40 years behind Scotland.
This is Dr. Loveday Jenkin. She's a Cornwall councillor for Crown and Wendron and currently acts as the deputy leader for Mebion Curno, the Party for Cornwall.
It's a civic nationalist party, which I think is a really good term that the SNP have been using for quite a time now. So civic nationalism is about Cornwall as a nation, all the people of Cornwall are citizens of Cornwall, basically. It's not about identity as such.
Yeah.
She also agreed that it's a loaded word.
English nationalism, like the EDL and all those sorts of things, that is, in my mind, that's fascism. And that's the issue, is when it gets linked to racism and xenophobia. Anything that sort of divides us can have bad connotations. So to a certain extent, I would reclaim the word and say, yes, I am a nationalist, but I would have to ensure that the people I was talking to understood what I meant by that.
So what does she mean by that?
I mean, the difference between your ethnicity and your citizenship. And I think everyone in Cornwall belongs to Cornwall. They are a citizen of Cornwall, which is what the SNP talk about in terms of civic nationalism. Yeah. Everybody is Scottish. Everybody is Cornish in that sense. In terms of your ethnic and cultural identity, that's a product of everything that's happened to you, and everyone has a slightly different flavour of it.
So then, I went and looked at Mebion Curno's party policies, and I was pleasantly surprised. The top things on their agenda include fighting for fair funding for Cornwall, demanding control over planning, proper locals' needs housing, improving public services, protecting the environment, and gaining greater recognition of Cornwall's unique identity and language. They also propose that Cornwall should have its own national assembly, allowing more decisions to be made by the people who actually live here, rather than some public schoolboys in Westminster. Obviously, I have some questions about the details and reality of these demands, but on the whole, I can't help but agree with most of them. Then, Loveday took the words straight out of my mouth.
So people will say, oh, I'd love to vote for Mebbin Kernow, I agree with all your policies, but I've got to vote X to keep Y out.
I think that's how I would feel, yeah.
I couldn't help wonder if Mebbin Kernow would ever gain enough support to make their demands a reality, or would tactical voting get in the way for someone like me? It sounded, though, like there was a groundswell happening for one freshly elected Mebbin Kernow councillor in particular. He seemed to get rave reviews from everyone I spoke to.
I look at somebody like Mike Bunny, and he is the most grounded person I have ever met. He's completely sure of who he is, of his place in the world. I mean, I'm envious of him.
He's absolutely infused and enthused about where he lives. He'll be down in the village and he'll say, it's going to be a nice evening tonight. Bring something to eat, bring something to drink. If you play an instrument, bring it along. Meet on the quay, 8 o'clock. And there'll be 150 people there all cheering each other, singing songs. Wow. And it's that simple.
Well, I thought it would be rude not to meet this legend. I caught up with Michael Bunny in a pub garden, where upon arrival, he handed me a copy of the Mebbin Kernow Members magazine called, wait for it, Cornish Nation. On the front cover was a big picture of the man himself, grinning wildly, with the headline underneath, stunning election victory in the St Muin and Grampound division. This guy was on fire!
You know, so I'm gay, I'm my ex-partner was black, I came out when I was, I don't know what age, 18 or something, 19?
In Cornwall.
In Cornwall. My first long-term partner was Afro-Caribbean, so we'd come back to the village, and unfortunately we separated because he wanted to go back to London and I wanted to move back here. Mm. But so I kind of challenged all that bullshit from a really, really young age. Mm. I always say, like, there are some various bigots, but at least I know them. And I know exactly, whereas I could be living in, yeah, I've lived in Oxford and never lived in London, but various other places. And, you know, I didn't know what the people next door thought, whereas down here, I know exactly what everyone thinks near enough. Mm. So I might not like some of the things that people think, but at least there's a strength of community there.
Here's the question again.
So would you describe yourself as a Cornish nationalist?
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
Do you think that there's different versions of that?
Definitely.
And people assume the worst.
Definitely. So for me, I've taught A-level politics for God knows how many years. I know there are many, many different strands of nationalism. So Cuba, you've got communist nationalism. You know, in other parts of the world, you've got very, very right-wing, xenophobic, chauvinistic nationalism. But you can also have liberationist nationalism. So all the anti-colonial, anti-imperial movements were nationalist movements. People wanted them to be socialist, and some of them were, but some of them weren't. They just didn't want to be governed by colonial powers. So in that sense, I would say nationalism, liberationist nationalism, has been one of the most positive forces. But obviously there's two sides to that coin as well, because you have to be so careful that it doesn't become...
It is interesting because it is always about defining yourself against somebody else.
Ooh.
Whether that's negative or positive, and it is always drawing a border of some description.
Yeah.
To be, we're this and you're not.
But it's interesting, so Dick explains this really well. He always says...
He's talking about Dick Cole, the Mebbin Kernow party leader.
He's an internationalist, but a nationalist. But if you look at the whole definition of internationalism, internationalism recognises nations, it just says that you cooperate together.
Mm.
So he always says, you can't be an internationalist without being a nationalist. Because otherwise you're denying the whole construct that creates internationalism.
Michael makes an interesting point here. I also have always tried to have a global outlook. But as someone said to me recently, if you were invited to take a dish to a food of the world dinner party, you'd want to take something unique from where you were from and proud of. Surely this is key. Understand your own culture and then share it with others. I started wondering if I should be more like Michael, a positive nationalist. He's also one of the nicest people you'd want to meet. I actually bought a Cornish coloured scarf and wore it round Camborne with pride. I thought about getting a bumper sticker for my car. Maybe I should speak more with a Cornish accent. But there was something niggling away at me. It's all well and good, me feeling proud and confident about my Cornishness. But for others, it's not so easy and much less inviting. In May 2021, I was invited on an artist retreat by the excellent Impossible Producing. Little plug there. At one point, we were asked to share any new ideas we had. So I got up and told them how I was working on a new one-man show about how I think I might be a nationalist. This went down like a lead balloon. There was a deathly silence. Before I knew it, the session had come to an end, and I'd run out of time to fully explain myself. I should mention here that the group were fairly diverse, made up of mostly theatre makers, a lot of them based in London. I felt like a right tit. But then, something interesting happened. Throughout the rest of the weekend, nearly every person who was in that room approached me individually and told me how interested they were in the topic of my show. I had some brilliant chats, and on the last night, stayed up very late ranting away with this man.
Someone said to me the other day, you know, if you'd been in New York for 4 years, you're a New Yorker. And that I kind of hold on to, and that to me is a bit what London feels like. You know, if you move to London, from wherever, you become a Londoner.
This is Matthew Zia. He's a British theatre director and DJ.
And I want that to be what it is in Cornwall, so that I can move to Cornwall with my family, because I think it's a gorgeous part of the world, and there's work or there's opportunity. It's often applied to the English of them being a tolerant nation. So I think I don't want to be tolerated. I want to be accepted, loved, embraced, and absorbed.
Matthew has Scottish, English, and Jamaican heritage. He lives in London, but comes to Cornwall often as a visitor. We discussed his experience of being a person of colour here and how exhausting he can sometimes find it.
It's always in the front of my mind, I think. Am I projecting something onto these people? Quite often, maybe I am. But where does that come from? When it comes from that time I approached that pub and someone said, look out, here comes a nigger. And you just go, oh.
I was shocked to hear this. Maybe Cornwall isn't as welcoming as I'd like to think it is. But then again, how would I know? So far in this series, I've only spoken to white people. It was time to look at the more difficult subjects of othering, xenophobia, and rural racism. What does the future hold for a more inclusive Cornwall? Find out more next time on The Reason Why.
The Reason Why was written, presented and produced by Seamus Carey. The music was by him too. Additional production on the theme tune was by Mr. BJ Jackson. Graphic design by Phyllida Blumel. Photography by Steve Tanner. Special thanks to all our contributors, as well as the Holman Climax Male Voice Choir for the sampling of their 1974 album, The Reason Why. The associate producer was Charlie Bunker. The executive producer was Paul Dodgson. This was an Impossible Producing and Seamus Carey production funded by Arts Council England.